Men, if you've lost your hair, it doesn't mean you can't find it again. Try Hims Hair Loss Solutions and you'll be joining hundreds of thousands of subscribers who found their hair again. It can be hard for men to deal with hair loss, even though it is common. Luckily, I'm here to provide you with a solution so you don't even have to talk about it. Through Hims, you can restore your hair by accessing their personalized hair loss solutions. Men value many different things about their appearance. But if you're a guy who really cares about your hair and find that it's slowly going away, you might be feeling discouraged when you look in the mirror. And that's where Hims comes in. Check out their personalized hair loss solutions, and you can start seeing your hair grow back in as little as 3 to 6 months. Hims provides you with convenient access to a range of hair loss treatments that work, all from the comfort of your couch. Hims makes treating hair loss simple with doctor-trusted options and clinically proven ingredients, like finasteride and minoxidil that can regrow hair in as little as 3 to 6 months. Choose from personalized chewable, oral, spray, and serum treatments to find what works best for you. The process is simple and 100% online, so there are no uncomfortable doctor visits. Answer a few questions, and a medical provider will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your treatment is sent directly to you for free. No insurance is needed, and one low price covers everything from treatments to ongoing care. Hims has hundreds of thousands of trusted subscribers, and they can help you get your confidence back too with visibly thicker and fuller hair. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your personalized hair loss treatment options. hims.com/Hail Mary. Results may vary, based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription products require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if a prescription is appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for full details and important safety information.
The NFL playoffs are better with FanDuel, because right now new customers can bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, guaranteed. That's $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. FanDuel, an official sportsbook partner of the NFL. 21 plus and present in select states. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets which expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
At Verizon, anyone can trade in their old phone for a new one on us with Unlimited Ultimate, which means everyone in your family could get a new phone and stay on your family plan, keeping you close.
Hey, Mom, you seen my toothbrush?
Yeah, I'm almost done with it.
Oh, maybe too close. Trade-in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and we're back for part two of the discussion of the offense against the Browns, which is really a discussion of like part zero to the Steelers game in a lot of ways. Joining me again for that is Sam Njoku. Sam, how are you doing?
I'm feeling pretty good, Ken. Thanks again for having me on. It's been a pleasure. Let's talk some football.
Now, I have the pronunciation of your last name correctly with Njoku, like the Browns.
Like the Browns. Tight end.
All right. Very good. Okay. Always want to make sure I get that. If saying somebody's name wrong is the worst thing when you do that. For a long time, I was on a show on the radio with a Baltimore legend, auto parts salesman. And he would never be able to pronounce my name. It's like see it on paper. And I hate to think that there might've been a learning disability or something involved, but it's just possible that he just could not figure out how to pronounce it. So he would just throw out a few syllables in the way he thought it thing. And I'd be always called Masuzak or something else.
Oh my gosh.
But Coach Buzz, love you very much. He's dearly departed from us now, but he was a absolutely legend in terms of auto parts sales, from when I was a kid to when I was on his radio show and in his last days, but a great guy.
That's awesome.
All right. So let's talk a little bit about the Ravens and their scheme in this game. They really leaned on Derrick Henry, obviously more from just the running the football thing, but they leaned on him for a lot of snaps in this game. He's been well rested for most of the season, taking right around half the snaps or a little bit more when he's been in there with Justice Hill, who brings nice complementary features to him as a receiving option and a pass blocking back. But in this game, 49 snaps for Henry, 15 for Mitchell, which I thought was good, and 5 for Ali, who managed in those 5 snaps to have 0 for 2 on targets.
Yeah, and I'm liking the usage of Derrick Henry. Who knows? Was this a part of the plan for the Ravens to kind of ease him in slowly just to make sure he's fresh for the end of the season? I'm sure they spoke about that, but it's very hard to do in the 18-game stretch, especially when they had a couple of pivotal matchups for them middle of the season when they had a possibility of going 0-3 at one point, all that stuff. So all that stuff in consideration, I love the way they used him. Derrick Henry's a decent pass blocker. I mean, I saw a couple of...
Oh, he's a great pass blocker, yeah.
Oh, man. I mean, I didn't really understand it at first, and it kind of leads to me to question, why is it that on passing downs, he's not on the field more? That's obviously being answered. Now he's starting to get a little more opportunities in the passing game just to give Lamar an extra offensive lineman. Man, he's a whammer out there in pass blocking scheme. So it's definitely good to see. And he's a fairly decent catcher of the football as well. So all of that is great. For the Ravens, it's going to pay dividends. It's going to give defenses more to think about as the postseason progresses. But all in all, I thought it was great usage by him. When Justice Hill gets back, I wonder how the usage would be more because Hill is a weapon. I think we've seen that this year. Mm-hmm. But overall, I like the usage from Derrick Henry. I think he's going to be an integral piece of the puzzle, especially if they make it to the AFC Championship game. I'm just salivating in the mouth at the possible matchup that the Ravens could have against the Chiefs. Chiefs are a formidable team, but I've seen some things this year that leads me to believe that the Ravens will be using Henry in a lot of different ways if they get that opportunity to play each other.
They'll need to. I mean, I don't want to look ahead any amount. I mean, you've got a potential poor weather, high wind game coming up on Saturday versus the Steelers. It's not a good matchup for the Ravens. It minimizes some of the Ravens' strengths, certainly. And you have the absence of Flowers. I think Henry has to play a big part in that game. I think they go to Buffalo. All the possibility for misery in Buffalo in terms of snow and wind and all the nastiness that can occur there. I think he's got to play a huge part in that game. You asked the question, was this the plan all along? I mean, he's got 325 carries. I don't know what more they could expect out of a 30-year-old back than that kind of number. And he's had the second highest success rate of any running back in NFL history with 275 plus carries. The only other guy beat him by just 0.1% at 58.9% is Edgerrin James a number of years ago and when he had a 360 carry season of all things. But Edgerrin James, we remember what a enormous central figure he was, almost like a Marshall Faulk was to the Rams' greatest show on turf in terms of being central to that offense.
That's a great stat to pull. Yeah, they definitely leaned on Derrick Henry a lot. I think I was more concerned with having him out of the field on passing downs in the red zone. They've cleared that up. They don't do that as much anymore. Maybe on third and goal, they'll probably put in a speed back, but for the most part, they've changed that. But yeah, to your point, they have used Derrick Henry, a 30-plus-year-old player, as much as they possibly could. I'm glad it's gone down this way where he's still relatively healthy. He looks like he still has that burst. We'll see how it goes in the end of the season. But to your point, weather is going to be a huge factor. It's why you have a team that can run the football as well as they do. We'll see how they do these next 3 games, but I, again, not trying to look ahead past the Steelers, but yeah, weather is going to be a huge factor for the Ravens. Passing the ball is going to be a luxury sometimes, especially if there's a blizzard in Buffalo or something like that, which would be make me irate because I know that passing game is a huge part of the Ravens offense, even though in my opinion, they're a power run team.
Yeah. Now Justice Hill, hopefully we'll be back this week. The concussion hopefully is dealt with at this point, and we're down to just an illness. I've been sick for the last couple of weeks. People have been noticing the offensive line articles haven't been coming out, and it's something where I've just had a really hard time shaking 2 different ailments here that relate to this. But Hill coming back, I would think, is going to be a big change to the offense. How do you expect them to use Hill when he comes back?
I think they'll probably go back to what they were doing before. I think with the absence of Zay Flowers, you might see a lot more passing schemes his way. They might use him as you might Zay Flowers and maybe some bubble screens and motioning to misdirect the defense and stuff like that. So I think they go that route with Justice Hill. I think he'll be a huge part of it. Maybe a situation where you see Derrick Henry and Justice Hill on the field at the same time. I think that would be awesome to see, but he's too much of a talent to not use him in the postseason. I think you'll see them use him a lot of different ways. And I think if they do so effectively, along with Keaton Mitchell, if he gets that burst back, we've seen some flashes, it could be a three-headed monster, the likes of which we expected come the beginning of the season.
Yeah, that would really be something. One of the things that has been, Hill has been extremely effective in games where he's not asked to do a lot of chip or set blocking. And in particular, as a receiver, he's been very effective. If you look at the big games he's had, and he's had some really big ones where he's been running wheel routes and he's been, out trying to find his appropriate place relative to his zone defense and allow himself as a check down on third down, been very effective in that. If he's asked to chip, then he has to, it's almost like a quarterback who turns his back on the field and play action. There can be discomfort in that kind of a quarterback reacquiring the field and then finding his receivers and his routes appropriate and then reacquiring the field is a fairly descriptive word. With Hill in the past game, there are some similarities, and a lot of his ineffectiveness career-wise as a receiver was turned around by some of the ways that Monken has used him differently and got him free. So I hope we see some of that. When he's in there, other teams almost are highly incented, frankly, to force him to pass block because he really is a legitimate weapon there. But we'll see if the Ravens can make use of him, get him into space against the Steelers and do some good things.
I hope they do, because he is a weapon. As you mentioned, chip blocking may be a necessity, especially in this upcoming game with TJ Watt up there next to Rosengarten. But as you mentioned, he's much more effective as a weapon when he's free in space to make those routes and get open in space, sometimes in a flat, sometimes in the middle of the field. So I'm interested to see how the Ravens implement him. I'm sure he'll play in this game just based on what we've heard from Harbaugh last week. But I think he's an added weapon, an added piece to this puzzle. Now, God, hopefully we get Zay Flowers back, another weapon adding on to what we've seen this offense do the last couple of weeks, could make this offense even more dangerous.
Yeah. All right. So we talked a little bit about in the first episode about the possibility of seeing more 12, more 13, particularly given the loss of Flowers. The Ravens played heavy in this game. Last 2 weeks, in fact, they've kind of returned to Greg Roman-like numbers, not quite. But of the heaviness we saw of the Roman offense, 2.17, 2.16 heavies per play the last two weeks. Again, that's the sum of tight ends, fullbacks, and OL6 divided by total snaps. So 2.16, 2.17, very heavy. That would be right at the very top of the current NFL. The Roman era, actually, they were over 2.3 in Romans last year, which is just that's the heaviest offense that anybody's played in a relative sense, maybe in NFL history, but certainly in the last 40 or 50 years of play. This week, obviously, more out of necessity. So they got Kolar back, which I thought I was very happy about. Allowed them to play more in line Kolar instead of sacrificing Likely or Andrews in that position.
Yeah, and Likely's gotten better as a blocker, and Mark Andrews has always been decent as a blocker. But yeah, Charlie Kolar is a different animal. He's definitely, I'm not just going to say he's an offensive lineman in that regard, but he definitely has that ability, and he's a decent pass catcher. So that there's some scheming that you can do if you're Todd Monken in that regard. But yeah, I definitely enjoy his presence. He definitely gives freedom to Isaiah Likely and Andrews to get going on the passing game in those seams. In those situations where they're playing 13 personnel. So I'm very interested to see how the Ravens do it this time. Again, necessity might require them to do it more. Zay Flowers isn't there, so you want to make sure that you have your best weapons. Having Isaiah Likely on the field more often than not to replace Zay Flowers seems like the way to go. Obviously, there'll be situations where they'll need a wide out, like a Nelson Agholor or Tylan Wallace, to go out there and be that Zay Flowers, I won't say decoy, but Zay Flowers replacement. But all in all, I think going heavy in this game and having success against it is probably the way to go for the Ravens.
Yeah. And I really love the complimentariness they get out of Kolar, because Kolar's really always an inline guy, very rarely stands up in the scheme. So he has two alignments. He'll be in a 3-point stance at the end of a line, or he'll be in a crouching hands on knees, feet even. That's why, the way, that's a key way to look for the difference between a tight end and a guy who's really looking to run a route, is the guys who their feet are even, hands on hips, they usually are going to have a blocking responsibility first, unless they're really selling something. They're a door-to-door salesman if they're really going out on a route from that. But they could be. I mean, they still can chip and go, obviously. But if in Likely's case in particular, the real value of him I see as a blocker, and he's had a great year as a blocker in a lot of ways, is when he can get out at a level two and forklift a smaller man. That could be even a linebacker. It could be a 220-pound linebacker where likely he'll slightly outweigh him. And I really like him blocking Deshaun Elliott. I think he's a great opportunity for the Ravens to try and neutralize that. Deshaun Elliott, he's quick and he is powerful. But if likely can get on him, he has the feet to stay upright and move him. He imposes his length and weight well, keeps his feet doing so, and has been very effective in terms of blocking in space on some of those edge runs, those crack tosses from Henry.
Yeah, and Isaiah Likely is an amazing blocker in open space. I think he just does a great job in those crack block situations where they're playing those tosses, maybe pulling a guard, the tackle to the left side, which is something that they routinely do to overload one side of the field. When you have Isaiah Likely out there in open space against a corner, against a safety, or one of those tweener linebackers that the Steelers possess, you can definitely get something going, open some holes up. So I think Isaiah Likely's availability and his talents and ability in this offense will be huge, especially in situations where they're trying to pretty much deviate and move the defense along when they're trying to really pressure Lamar Jackson with those off-tackle blitzes. So I think Isaiah Likely could be that guy that plays a huge part in this game. He's probably one of my go-to guys when I think about who can have success in this game. We'll need him to play at his best, especially with the loss of Zay Flowers.
Yeah. The Flowers, this last game, he only was targeted twice, so this number doesn't mean a lot. But his ADOT was only 1.5, which is telling you they didn't really go down the field of Flowers on a case, because that could be, I don't actually know what it was, but it could be a 7 and a minus 4, I guess, would be 3 total to give you, divided by 2 would give you 1.5. But he didn't have any long throws down the field in there. He had a drop in a kind of a short pass that looked like it really should have been caught and would have been a first down. Mm-hmm. But other than that, they didn't really use him down the field against the Browns. Bateman and Andrews were used much more as intermediate and deeper targets, including what I thought were just two great throws to Andrews, where in each case, he didn't present his hands too early, made a great play on the football both times, one in the end zone, one down the right sideline.
Yeah, that right sideline grab was otherworldly. I don't even know how Andrews continued to do that. And Lamar, to put it in the breadbasket where only he can get it, is just superb talent. I think it just speaks to what Lamar Jackson is able to do as a football player, throwing that football. And I think Andrews will probably be in situations continuously like that, where he's asked to do more on the deep end because of the lack of Zay Flowers, opposite of Rashad Bateman. I think that's going to be the way to go. I think I mentioned that in the last episode, where having Andrews opposite of Rashad Bateman will help keep the defense honest and not overload one side with zone coverage or just bodies in general, and give Lamar Jackson a chance to move the football down the field.
All right. I think we talked enough about the missed tackle. So let me get my offensive line notes here together. I think we'll move on and talk about that a little bit.
All right. Yeah, this offensive line, I think, had a lot of good things. All things considered, I think, again, we talked about in the last episode, the Browns did a great job of pushing bodies down towards Lamar Jackson in this offensive line, just in general, just to disrupt things. But I think I saw a lot of good from this offensive line overall. Stanley has been, in my opinion, a stalwart for this offensive line throughout the season. He's been definitely one of the more consistent offensive linemen to really give Lamar Jackson time in the pocket. How would you assess Stanley this go around?
You know, this was a good game for Stanley, and he had obviously the very tough assignment because he was up against Myles Garrett. So he got a good subjective adjustment in this game, but he played pretty well overall. I'll go through it very quickly. 66 plays. He had 55 blocks. He missed 6. He did give up 3 pressures, and that was actually 2 plus another 2 half pressures. So he's involved in 4 pressure events there, plus another 1/3 of a quarterback hit where he allowed the pocket to be phone boothed as a quarterback hit was made. That was really Linderbaum's fault, as I saw it. 0.73, his aggregate score per play. But because he's going against Myles Garrett, he got a 0.08 adjustment, which is the highest I'll ever give a player for a game is 0.10. And by the way, that might not be enough, potentially under some circumstances. And this would be the kind of game where it might not be enough when you're facing a Myles Garrett. But he also allowed Garrett to flush Jackson another time, which didn't count against his pressure number. So I docked him a couple of points there. Still 0.81 overall, a B in the game. We're still seeing good level 2 blocking from Stanley, 4 L2s in this game. He ran his track properly on his only pull, didn't make a block, but he gets a P1N, I call it, where he's the trailing player in a two-man pull. And he runs his track properly, but there just wasn't anybody to block. So that was fine. One nice highlight combination block. A very solid game from Stanley. Anytime you basically keep the score sheet from getting filled and don't have any penalties and generally keep Myles Garrett off your quarterback, you've had a good game. And that's something I think Stanley can definitely be proud of. And this was certainly an above average game for the whole season for him. He's had a little bit of an up and down season. Now, the good thing about it is he really hasn't had a bunch of super down games where he's fallen off the table. So there hasn't been an O'Neal Cousins kind of performance or a James Hurst at his worst kind of thing. But he's had some up and down, and that is normal, by the way. It's normal to have performances at all sorts of levels. And it was kind of easier to see in the old PFF grading system where they would show you a total green and total red amount for a game. Like this guy had -2 for this game. It didn't mean he'd been terrible or anything. It just meant he had more negative plays than positive plays. And I think the way to look at Stanley's season is he's had more positive games than negative games. And it's been generally good. He didn't make the Pro Bowl. I honestly don't believe he deserved it this year. And it's kind of sad for him because he had a few million dollars on the line on the thing. But it's probably where he is. I'm a little bit less bullish on who he is, but I will say this: Stanley and the bull pressure that he allows while generally maintaining his mirror with the edge rusher works extremely well with Lamar. Lamar's very comfortable working with a left tackle who can do that thing for him. And even if he gets bumped or even if the cone gets impeded in a way that forces Lamar to move a little bit to throw, Lamar can do that. Joe Flacco, Kirk Cousins, those kind of quarterbacks, they're even though they have great arm strength and great arm talent, they're generally speaking, they're very bothered by that.
Yeah, and that's one of the great things about Lamar, I think, in my opinion, that just having that ability to, you know, weather that storm, if you will, in case offensive lineman were to get beat by a guy. And I think Stanley has had a great season compared to last season. He was dealing with an injury. A lot of fans were down on him. So I'm very impressed with the way that he's handled it. Very interested to see what the Ravens do with him in the offseason. I think
What is your thought of where that would go?
I honestly, if depending, and I always link these type of situations to postseason success. If the Ravens, let's say, make my dreams come true and go to the Super Bowl and win a championship, I think they're more likely to let him go and maybe move Rosengarten to the left tackle. I know Rosengarten hasn't been exceptional, but I think the plan has always been, in my opinion, to move him to the left tackle position. There's also a chance that the Ravens don't see that he's that guy, draft a guy or get a guy off the street. But I think Stanley's numbers wise compared to what, you know, he may be doing on the field may elude the Ravens to possibly move on from him. But I'm also sentimental. I think if the Ravens are a game shy or two games shy, they bring him back again for one last ride if he's willing to make the necessary financial adjustments for the Ravens to make that feasible. But I think it's a conversation that Ravens will need to have moving forward regardless, because he's, I don't know if he's priced his way out of Baltimore, but he's definitely made the conversation a lot tougher if you're a front office guy.
And we saw this like coming a mile away. We saw that coming, that this will probably be his last year in Baltimore, because either he'll price himself out by playing well enough or the Ravens won't want him because he has another injury plague situation. Thankfully, it hasn't been Colin B. Yep. You know, and it's a lot like the coaching situation with losing a Mike McDonald or losing potentially a Todd Monken this offseason. You have to kind of aspire to that. The best situation you can have is Ronnie Stanley leaves as a free agent and the Ravens, you know, can make good on that. So it's hopefully, anyway, if Ronnie does go somewhere, it's because the market is so attractive for him. I don't see him making a big financial compensatory allowance for the Ravens, a hometown discount. Let's put it that way. I think that, you know, the Ravens could incent him in some ways because I mean, Ronnie's been here his whole career. He could go into the Ring of Honor if he signs his next contract with the Ravens. A one-year contract might do it, particularly if the Ravens have any kind of postseason success to go with that. But a three-year contract would definitely do it. And if you're looking like how much could he compromise financially, I think like you're looking at about 5% less. I think if he's going to sign 3 years for 60 somewhere else, he'll sign 3 years for 57 for the Ravens, maybe. But I don't see him signing for less than that. And there are considerations, and I don't like to say this often, but the Maryland tax situation is not good for players. And this is something Rafael Palmeiro commented on to his own detriment at the time when he was originally drafted, not drafted, but originally signed by the Orioles. He says, well, look, I had offers from the Rangers where there's Texas and there's no stadium tax and Maryland. And you got to look at it from my perspective that it's one place, it's 27.5 million. The other is 30 million. I'm thinking, no, people don't have to look at it from your perspective because they can't understand it. Don't bring it up in the press. That you do that. But it, Maryland, there's a lot of reasons why people go to die in Florida. Let's just put it that way.
Oh yeah.
It's not just the heat. So.
SA tax is a killer for sure, yeah, for players. And that's something that I'm sure Ravens deal with. Luckily for the Ravens, they're an alluring franchise, a very attractive franchise, yep, for a lot of players, maybe not receivers. Some receivers out there may not enjoy it, but for the most part, players want to play for Baltimore and they're willing to, yeah, deal with the financial ramifications of playing in Maryland. But to your point, yeah, it's definitely a hit into your wallet to play in Maryland because of the state tax. I myself have to deal with it myself, maybe not to the degree of these millionaires out there.
Sure.
But definitely the possibility of playing or working for somewhere in Maryland as opposed to Texas or Nevada or Florida. Definitely.
Tennessee. Definitely, yeah. All those places, they do have more attractive situations from that. But it's almost always that it's the inverse of kind of where you want to live. Baltimore's a great place to live. And no matter what people say about, you know, the wire and all the murder talk it is, Baltimore's a wonderful city. I grew up here. I'm very loyal to it as a hometown, but it's also right in the middle of the Northeast Corridor. You can go to DC if you want to see museums or government or whatever you want to see. You can go up to New York very easily for the day to watch a show if you want to do that. And you don't have to live in New York to do it. One of the things you notice about going to New York, I'm going on a tangent here a lot, but we just went to the Giants game there. And we went to see friends in Manhattan to go out to dinner and whatnot the night before. And you spend an unbelievable amount of time figuring out how you're going to get from point A to point B. You don't have an available car. So it means you're spending an hour and a half per night figuring out how to get from point A to point B. You don't have that problem in Baltimore. You know, exactly. You don't spend that amount of time on the road getting places. We complain about traffic here like everybody does everywhere, but it's not really that bad at all. So anyway, my two cents for Baltimore there.
I love the city. I do love the city. I think it's a fantastic place to live. And I think that, I myself, full disclosure, I love theater. So going to New York and watching Hamilton or watching Wicked is always a joy to do, and I don't have to deal with the money associated with it. I could go to DC, go to the museum, even drive to Florida if I'm really interested in doing so, or even flying to Florida doesn't cost as much if you live somewhere. Yeah.
Southwest hub here, so you go anywhere to watch the NFL if you want.
Exactly.
It's 2 hours away at most. So.
It's a good time for me, so I'm sure Ravens players agree with it. You know, Lamar's a Florida guy through and through, of course, but you know, living in Maryland's not that bad for him because he can make that travel to Florida. And what have you. Of course, he's a multimillionaire, so he doesn't care about the money associated with it. But just the time to travel from point A to point B is, in my opinion, something to consider if you're a player.
By the way, another reason why players should go for deferred contracts. So guys like Bobby Bonilla and whatnot, if you have to make a little sacrifice in terms of the interest rate, and Bobby Bonilla didn't make any sacrifice. Interest rates dropped. He's making a ton of money. The value he got out of that is so much greater, but it's a brilliant tax play as well because he can live in Florida or wherever in the years where he gets that income, and then it's a lot lower tax. So any football player, any baseball player should be looking for that sort of contract if it's available. I think that's something the Orioles probably ought to be levering more is a willingness to put money aside and pay it as deferred comp down the road. I think that could be very attractive and they could be a leader in that regard, particularly with competing with New York, which is an even higher tax state than Maryland.
They need to do something. I need some more players on my Orioles team. I'm a little salty about that. We're not going to talk about that instead, you know, but yeah, Orioles need to do something to get me a little more excited because not much in the go of free agency so far, but yeah, that's neither here nor there. Let's talk a little more about Stanley. Again, as you mentioned, he did have success against Myles Garrett. Anytime a player has success or plays against a premier pass rusher, I'm paying close attention. And more often than not, Stanley's either going to hold his own or holding him off long enough for Lamar Jackson to make a play or for his running backs to make a play. So I definitely enjoyed Stanley's output with that. Do you have any more thoughts on Stanley?
No, B for Stanley for the game. So let's move on if we're good with that.
Yep. Very good with that. Okay. Voorhees is next. I think Voorhees, for the most part, played the majority of the game. I think they tried to get Patrick McCarry in, but John Harbaugh mentioned due to his illness, he was having some issues there. So Voorhees got the majority of the play. What are your thoughts on Voorhees?
Yeah, I'm guessing this might have been a bathroom game for Patrick McCarry, given what's going around here in town now and the possibility there. But he made 5 out of 6 blocks while he was in. Voorhees, 45 plays, made 43 blocks. So it was really a breakout game for him in a lot of ways. Missed one, had one shared penetration on a run play. So that's a minus one. He shared that with, I believe, with Rosengarten, based on how my score sheet looks. Yes, shared it with Rosengarten. And then he had a holding penalty, which was unfortunate. And that kind of, it didn't ruin his score because his grade and his overall score was still very good, but it definitely reduced him by a full grade level in this. So the penalty significant, 37 points on the game, 0.82 per play. He had an adjustment on top of that. He, unlike some of the other players along the offensive line, he didn't allow Lamar to be flushed and have any kind of a reduction in his adjustment for that. So 4 level 2 blocks, 2 pancakes, 3 out of 3 on pulls, 2 highlights. Basically all of those numbers were very good for the position, particularly for the number of snaps, and his grade of B overall. And I think probably if you look at this, this is the best game of Andrew Vorey's career. And I'll have to go back and make sure. There's no way he had a game that I've forgotten about earlier this year, and he didn't play last year. But I just want to take a quick look at what he did the first several games of the season. But he was not nearly as effective. So he had he did have a B in game one that. It was kind of an uneven game, but it was a little bit less than this, then a C minus in week two, then a D in week three. And they didn't really return till now where he got a B. So it's a very, very nice turnaround for him. And I think a good omen for future play.
Yeah. And I'm very impressed with Voorhees. I'm not going to lie. When he substituted McCarry, I got a little nervous. McCarry, I haven't really been too high on, not very bullish on McCarry this year, but to see him get substituted, Voorhees to come in, I was kind of concerned. Well, McCarry is there and he's not to my liking. Is Voorhees going to be any better? But he surprised me in this contest, especially with the defense that was really trying to get things going down the middle of the offense, in my opinion. So he held his own pretty well, in my opinion. I liked what I saw. Who knows what's going to happen with his offensive line? I'm sure this will not be the same starting five next season. So I'll be very interested how the Ravens decide to adjust and move guys around. I think Voorhees, along with Fialele, have potential to be stalwart pieces with giving a little more playing time. So this is good that he got that opportunity in the game that mattered in some regard. So I like what I saw from Voorhees.
Let's hang in on one second on that line, on the Voorhees play. Was that I think this is a huge statement game for who might be the starter next year. Remember, we're going through, McCarry is one of 3 offensive tackles, but he also is playing guard right now as a starter, who will be leaving the Ravens. And the Ravens are going to have to really figure out who they're going to bring back and whatnot. They might not be able to afford McCarry. He might have priced himself out. I think he's actually played better than what a lot of people are giving credit for. We'll get to that maybe. Well, we'll get to that in another game he plays more, because there's not a lot to say this week. But yeah. He's really had the majority of his deductions this year have been on penalties. Tremendous majority. And otherwise, he's played very well. I think there's a correctability to that, which I think is potentially positive. I also think there's a lot of reasons why you want a very large man playing next to Linderbaum on both sides, that's highly complimentary. So I think that, you know, Ben Cleveland could have been a good alternative there as well. But in terms of Voorhees, this game, in terms of what it means for next year and a potential solution for the Ravens, I don't think you can overstate the importance of it.
I like where your head's at with that. And the knock on Voorhees and Fialele at the beginning of the year has always been about playing time, snaps, get these guys acclimated to the role. I think a lot of Ravens fans are impatient, and I get it, you know, because, you know, they have aspirations. But yeah, this is the time. These moments are why you do it. I think the Ravens decided to do it with Fialele and keep him there. And there are positives to the reason why they do that. Positives to his game, his ceiling, I think, is exponentially higher than anyone else on the roster as far as offensive line is concerned. But yeah, having Voorhees come in and play this well, I think pays huge dividends for them in the offseason and where their heads are and formulating an offensive line to compete in 2025. So I agree with you completely. His performance was fantastic. Do you have any other thoughts on Voorhees?
No, that's good.
Awesome. That's good. Let's get to Linderbaum. In my opinion, he wasn't the best in this game. A lot of the attacks in my opinion, from the Browns defense were centered around him. A lot of errors, a lot of tackles, in my opinion, for Derrick Henry in the backfield, the opportunities that presented itself for the defense, I think were due to Lindenbaum's struggles. But that's just my opinion. I haven't really had a chance to delve into it. What are your thoughts?
So he missed 11 blocks in this game, and that has not been a huge problem, not to this degree for him at any point this year. I associate that with more of his rookie year. The problem was mostly as a pass blocker in this game. He allowed two pressures and two-thirds of a quarterback hit. There are going to be people who will say otherwise on that quarterback hit, by the way, that it should have gone to Falele. I completely disagree. I think that it was a matter where Lindenbaum had been bowled back as part of a pick play, and he didn't present an opportunity for Falele to take over that block in any reasonable way, and ended up being the that was the constriction to the pocket that created the quarterback hit. And it's been a step back year for Lindenbaum in terms of a pass blocker. Now, to go over his career again, terrible pass blocker as a rookie, really a bad pass blocking year. Because of the way PFF weights pass and run blocking, a lot of people were more or less deluded into the notion that he had a great rookie year. He had a good rookie year because starting at a C or C minus level or a C or C plus level, maybe in his case, is a great place to start in your rookie year. Come into the league and start. It's very rare that players do that. And when it is, it's oftentimes a first round talent. There was tremendous upside from that, but he hadn't gotten there yet. He's getting overwhelmed by big men. Dexter Lawrence gave him all kinds of trouble in 22. So did a number of other big men, Cam Hayward and others. But anyway, in the next year, the huge story of the Ravens offensive line was Linderbaum's giant leap forward as a pass blocker. And he had gone so far that I was actually projecting that he would have to have a consolidation year where he would play at a slightly lower pass blocking year because the increase in value had been just too great. And that's actually been what's happened. Linderbaum has not had a great pass blocking year again, has taken a step back from where he was a year ago. He still made the Pro Bowl. Probably did not quite deserve it this year. I think he's one of the guys who has been a little bit overcast in this Ravens team in general in terms of their Pro Bowlers. But he's among the top 6 to 8 centers in the entire NFL. So I'm still happy with him, you know, in that regard. But probably did not quite deserve to make the Pro Bowl. This game was a tough pass blocking game for him. 0.70 per play was his score, even with an adjustment that leaves him in the D range. He's still maintaining all the mobility, got out there for 6 level 2 blocks, 1 pancake, 1 out of 1 on pulls. But the thing that you're noticing more and more, and this was true of a number of the missed blocks, is they're really losses at the line of scrimmage where somebody is beating him left or right. And the Ravens can probably reduce that number by having another big man playing next to him, which would be what I would say would be something to have for next year. Vorhees, for some of the technical aspects he brings and the strength that he brings to the position, he's still a very lean, perpendicular, not sand in the pants. He's an apple, not a pear, is what I'm really trying to say. At guards, you want pear-shaped men with a lot of weight in their hips. You want a low center of gravity. You still want long arms because you always want that, but you want a low center of gravity and guys who can move and present leverage as they go. They don't really have that with Vorhees. As strong as he is, that's not his game in that. And I think that's a kind of a it's something they would like to have as a much larger man next to Linderbaum. You don't want to necessarily have an immobile guy on that side. And that's the trade-off, of course, is where on the range of ideal size and shape and mobility do you want? So I don't think you want another Daniel Falele over on that side, but you do want a bigger man. And Cleveland would have been the guy who was, you know, extraordinary size that might have been very good meshed with the Linderbaum.
I wonder why they're not playing Ben Cleveland more. I think they gave him a little more snaps here, but
yeah,
I'm very surprised they're not plugging him in. It's something going on in practice. I won't bore you guys with the details about what's going on or try and even wonder.
Well, let's talk about him right now, if we can, for just a second, because he played 16 snaps in this game, made 13 blocks. He only had one miss, but he had two half pressures allowed. You know, in looking at this game, it wasn't a particularly impressive performance from Cleveland. You look at it and you see Vorhees really decidedly outplaying Cleveland in this particular game. Now, the question most of the year has been McCary or Cleveland, and they've gone with McCary. McCarrie hasn't been bad this year. Again, I think he's probably played. This wasn't the game where you looked at Cleveland and said, boy, he should have been in there the whole year. This is a game where you say, look, this wasn't a great game from Cleveland, honestly.
Okay, good. I guess puts my mind at ease a little bit. Yeah. I know John Harbaugh has alluded to that fact that, you know, simply, you know, we got better guards out there than Cleveland. Cleveland's working to get his way up. So I think that statistic you pointed out and his performance makes me feel a little better about the decision-making. But I wanted to ask you a couple of questions about Linderbaum. It's a two-part question. The first question is, how much do you think his size will impact him against bigger opponents as the years progress? We know he's still young and he's still learning, but one of the knocks on him coming out of college was his size, and it seems as though when he's facing bigger defenders, he has struggled. Do you see that continuing? Do you see him learning to deal with that? And the second part of that question is, do you think that a bigger guy on either side would help him? Do you think having a Makari opposite him or an inexperienced Faalele to his right has hurt him in the last 18 games, as you would say? Because, again, 2023, 24, he looked really good. This year with two inexperienced guards, well, Makari not so inexperienced, more of a swing guy, he's taking a step back.
So, okay, first of all, if I'm trying to say like how much he's been hurt by the two guys next to him relative to last year when he had Zeitler and Simpson playing next to him. So Simpson wasn't ideal either. Simpson had a lot of penalties and was not a perfect technician, but he had good size, and he was a guy that could do some of the things that were effective. And Linderbaum had his best year next to those two players. But I would say that Faalele has cost him a fair amount relative to Zeitler, but that's not really a fair standard because Zeitler was so good and the Ravens chose not to pay him. It's not fair to put all that on Faalele. It's just, it is what it is, right? That he's lost some due to who Faalele is. But Faalele does present the size that I think works very well with Linderbaum, generally speaking. They just need to get, a little better at combination blocking and doing the things they do. And maybe more importantly, they need to get better with the stunt handoffs. And we saw in this game, the issue with not having matched depth. Matched depth is, by the way, that's the depth. That's exactly what the defense is trying to do to you, is try to get unmatched depth from the two defensive linemen by going whole hog across the guard's face, usually into the, in this case, it would be the right shoulder of the center, to drive him back at an angle. And by creating that unmatched depth, it means that the looper, it is a very difficult time picking up that player. It makes it very difficult for Faalele to do it. And in particular, if the looper is going around in the direction where Faalele has to pick up the block, and then Linderbaum has to slide over and pick up a second block, makes it very difficult. So that it's not an ideal situation to begin. But I would say this year, it's even been a bigger problem in the left A gap, with McCarrie being undersized and other teams deciding that's the place where they want to figure out how to attack the Ravens by stunt or by other twists and games they're playing there. So it's been a step back past the year for Linderbaum, no matter how you do it. Can he improve against big players? I think he did in 23. I think circumstances were good for him to do so. And I think the Ravens could get there again. If they get good dominating guards, then you're going to see that Linderbaum's mobility, Linderbaum's ability on combination blocks, working with guards who know exactly what they're doing, is going to improve. But again, you got to economize somewhere on the team. Guard is often a position where teams will try and do that, and the Ravens certainly have. They probably will not completely economize in terms of draft capital this next year. They'll probably have other options because it's out of necessity. But it's a tough thing, and they're coming up on a decision on whether or not they pay Linderbaum. That's happening faster than they expect, because he really has to be extended this year. By making a second Pro Bowl, he got elevated to the highest possible level of offensive line 50-year contract, which will not be affordable for the Ravens. The Ravens will have to decline that option, which comes at the end of this year, which puts an enormous amount of pressure on them to extend Linderbaum prior to 2025. So they'll have to make that judgment. And that, to me, along with Stanley, now that's become one of the biggest things. And it may even preclude the Ravens from making other really important signings they need. I mean, Travis Jones, Isaiah Likely, figuring out their future, even Kyle Hamilton a year early. They have an extra year with Hamilton because they can afford him at $20 million at safety for a year if they have to. But he's a guy I'd want to decide his future sooner rather than later as well.
Man, you made excellent points. All of this is tying together. It's one of the main reasons why you can't go out and get a $25, $30 million wide receiver. Yeah. Ravens fans, you know, this is the reason, because the core of your team is in jeopardy of being dismantled, and you have to make those decisions. So, yeah, I think it's going to be an interesting decision for the Ravens to make. I don't know if they extend them. I mean, you probably have to at this point, especially with the Pro Bowls, but as you mentioned, there's a lot of other needs that the Ravens have. I need the Ravens to keep Travis Jones. I know that we're talking about offense here, but I just love Travis Jones and what he means.
Right there with you. Right there front. With you, yeah, my friend.
You just have to keep him. So it's going to be interesting to see what they do. But any more thoughts on Lindenbaum?
No, we're good.
Awesome. Let's talk about Falele, polarizing figure, but a lot of Ravens fans. I won't call them casuals, but you know, when you think about bad offensive line play, first thing that you think about is Falele. But I think he's played decent football this year. After having a slow start, he does have some struggles, but again, with his size and experience, that's going to be a part of it. I think he played decent in this game. I don't think that he was a reason for a lot of faults. I think of the one or two players that I saw where he just looked out of touch. But again, with that size playing guard, man, that's a tough ass. So I'm glad to see the progression throughout the year that he's made. And I was very vocal about the need for them to make that switch at guard, but they stuck with him. Pro Bowl alternative, Danielle Falele. You got to put some respect on his name now because he did accomplish that task. So good on him. What are your thoughts about him in this game?
By the way, I was told by a member of the Ravens they will not disclose. They're not willing to disclose what alternate Danielle Falele was. And remember, Tyler Huntley was, I think, the sixth alternate when he made the Pro Bowl a few years ago. I go through his grades at midseason because he was in a real funk. But between the Tampa Bay game in week 7, he had a great game against Washington, by the way, put it all together, great pass blocking game, had an A against Washington. But after that, F against Tampa Bay, D against Cleveland, C against Denver, D against Cincinnati, D against Pittsburgh, C minus against the LA Chargers, D against Philadelphia, and D against the New York Giants. In the last 3 weeks, he has played some great football.
Men, if you've lost your hair, it doesn't mean you can't find it again. Try Hims Hair Loss Solutions and you'll be joining hundreds of thousands of subscribers who found their hair again. It can be hard for men to deal with hair loss, even though it is common. Luckily, I'm here to provide you with a solution so you don't even have to talk about it. Through Hims, you can restore your hair by accessing their personalized hair loss solutions. Men value many different things about their appearance, but if you're a guy who really cares about your hair and find that it's slowly going away, you might be feeling discouraged when you look in the mirror. And that's where Hims comes in. Check out their personalized hair loss solutions, and you can start seeing your hair grow back in as little as 3 to 6 months. Hims provides you with convenient access to a range of hair loss treatments that work, all from the comfort of your couch. Hims makes treating hair loss simple with doctor-trusted options and clinically proven ingredients, like finasteride and minoxidil that can regrow hair in as little as 3 to 6 months. Choose from personalized chewable, oral, spray, and serum treatments to find what works best for you. The process is simple and 100% online, so there are no uncomfortable doctor visits. Answer a few questions, and a medical provider will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your treatment is sent directly to you for free. No insurance is needed, and one low price covers everything from treatments to ongoing care. Hims has hundreds of thousands of trusted subscribers. And they can help you get your confidence back, too, with visibly thicker and fuller hair. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your personalized hair loss treatment options. hims.com/Hail Mary. Results may vary, based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription products require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if a prescription is appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for full details and important safety information.
The NFL playoffs are better with FanDuel because right now new customers can bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, guaranteed. That's $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. FanDuel, an official sportsbook partner of the NFL. 21 plus and present in select states. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets which expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. You know when you're really stressed or not feeling so great about your life or about yourself? Talking to someone who understands can really help. But who is that person? How do you find them? Where do you even start? Talkspace. Talkspace makes it easy to get the support you need. With Talkspace, you can go online, answer a few questions about your preferences, and be matched with a therapist. And because you'll meet your therapist online, you don't have to take time off work or arrange childcare. You'll meet on your schedule, wherever you feel most at ease. If you're depressed, stressed, struggling with a relationship, or if you want some counseling for you and your partner, or just need a little extra one-on-one support, Talkspace is here for you. Plus, Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance? No problem. Now, get $80 off of your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Yeah, sure thing. Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that.
Yeah.
No hassle.
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
The best New Year's deals are happening now at Tanger Outlets. Celebrate with up to 70% off savings from Nike Factory Store, Coach, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. From activewear to accessories, beauty, and apparel, find everything you're looking for to kickstart the new year. The clock is ticking. Hurry into Tanger Outlets to save more. Hundreds of brands, unbeatable value. Plan your trip at Tanger.com.
All of a sudden. So against Pittsburgh, had a B in that game, then an A against Houston, and then a B minus in this game against Cleveland. You're going to look out on PFF and you're going to see a lower score than that would indicate from Falele. But I think that's primarily due to one quarterback hit they gave to him. And I think he really didn't have anything to do with that. I thought that was, we talked about, I think, on Linderbaum, is that Linderbaum had really given up the depth consideration. Falele didn't have a chance to react to that. So I thought that was pretty much all on Linderbaum. If you go at Falele here, missed six blocks, one penetration he gave up, 1.5 pressures. It wasn't perfect, but scored 0.79 per play with an adjustment that gets him up to 0.83, which is at the minimum a B minus for the B level. And his other mobility stuff was solid, four level two blocks, three pancakes. By the way, that's been a big thing missing from his game, is a willingness to finish. And when you're a guy like that, just do that an extra two times a game. And it's easy to say that. It's actually hard to get pancake blocks in the NFL. But when the guy gives you a chance to pancake him, go ahead and finish him. I mean, he's, you know, oftentimes he'll try and get inside of you, and you've got him blocked out of the play. So you could just kind of wall him out of the play and do that. Go ahead and take him to the ground and finish him. You're not going to go up and make a productive block once Henry's even with you already in terms of doing that. Go ahead and put your 375 pounds on top of him and let him feel it, and then see how he wants to try and make that move on you the next time. But that's the thing I'm most bothered about, is his hand usage has not been what it should be from a big man like that. And his willingness to finish just doesn't have the nasty streak that you hope that will occur. I think, you know, it's been very clear, was very clear in camp, how much Jody loved him, because Jody would yell at him like crazy, take him out and yell at him. I mean, he obviously sees something there that he really wanted to build, and he loved his work ethic and things like that. And then, you know, it's sad that Jody hasn't lived to see these last three games and how well he's played, because I think he had a vision for it that I think has looked pretty darn good. And, Falele's been a very solid lineman these last three games. And the unfortunate thing about this is, if you hope that this happens, you hope this happens earlier in his career, and not he's a year three development, will go into year four as a likely starting candidate. He'll likely be the de facto starter entering camp. He'll certainly be the incumbent at the very least, even if they draft guards. But he probably has that job to start next year. And then you're going to lose into free agency. So it's just it's a bummer. He is one of the guys, by the way, who the Ravens could consider this month, like right now, extending him. Wait a minute. Cannot do that until the end of the season. I'm wrong. But as soon as the season's over, he'll be 3 years of seniority, and they'll be able to sign him to an extension if they can find a relative team-friendly price. He'd be one of the good ones. Ardarius Washington is another one that's really then you consider doing that too, in addition to Travis Jones. And, you know, right there you see all the dollars that the Ravens could could spend in various positive ways.
Yeah, it's so frustrating, especially with all this talent that the Ravens have. And we talked about it last year, how Ravens are losing a lot of key, cheap players that are making impacts. Yeah. Starting to see it again. I mean, gosh, it happens every year. It's a good thing if you're a front office guy. It means that you're drafting and drafting free agents well. You're signing and drafting free agents well. You're drafting players well in the later rounds, and they're making impacts for you. But it's so frustrating as a fan to see these guys up and leaving. You mentioned it, Falele, there's a good chance he's out of here. And, yep. And I think after the Eagles game, and I was at the Eagles game for that game, and I saw him get Trellison, literally the entire offensive line, they struggled in that contest. And it's not hard to see why with that front four. But since then, as you mentioned, he has had performance after performance after performance. Great game against the Steelers, who have an opportunity on Saturday to duplicate that performance. It's good to see him come into his own. And you mentioned the nastiness and not having that nasty streak with him. I think a lot of it is because he's thinking. He's in the thought process and trying not to make a mistake on the field, and he's learning. I think if he gets comfortable, he'll start to see him use his size more. But you see it all the time with young guys who don't have that second nature to make those plays. He's really thinking on his feet as the play develops to not make that mistake. You mentioned stunts being a concern for him. I've seen it on film week after week after week, previously in the early goings of the season, where he struggled with stunts and teams took advantage of it. But he seems to have cleaned that up a little bit, or is learning to clean it up. I think Falele has all the ceiling is, again, sky high. That size, if he can get his movement down, it'll be a huge plus. But again, as you mentioned, he's going to be gone soon, most likely, because his performance is going to improve and he's going to get that playing time next season. So it's a bummer, but it also is a testament to how well he's played and how much confidence John Harbaugh and company have in him moving forward.
Coached offensive line team always creates these problems for us, but it is what it is. And
it's a good thing. It's a good thing. Hopefully they'll find a way in the offseason to bring in some more talent. I'm sure they'll be drafting interior offensive linemen in the draft and maybe even a tackle or two, depending on what they do with Stanley. But again, I think they have the coaching staff and the acumen to get this team up to snuff. And again, you got Lamar, who can extend plays to help you learn blocking without sacrificing too much in the way of stats. And you got Derrick Henry to push guys down the field. So good problem to have. But again, I just want to give a shout out to Falele because he really has improved in recent weeks. Any more thoughts on Falele?
No, we're good. B minus for the game for him.
Awesome. Rosengarten is last but not least. And in the beginning of the season, they had Makari at the right tackle spot. I was not a fan of it. I thought you drafted this guy for a reason. Plug him in and let him play. They've done that. And I think after week four is when they made that decision to transition to Rosengarten. He's played every single snap. He's had some success and has some struggles, I think, alongside Falele, but that's what it is. You have two inexperienced guys neck and neck with each other, and you're going to have those struggles. But I think Falele has improved, and I think Rosengarten has done a decent job, but there's some things they're doing schematically to help with that as well, which I think if Rosengarten is to improve upon his performance, maybe we get some more spread options out there and really spread this defense out. What are your thoughts on him in this game?
So first of all, I agree with you that he's generally played a lot better. He was struggling. I mean, I think he was at a C or C minus season through about 10 weeks, but much like when the defense started to pick it up since week 11, he's had C, A, C, A, A, C, B. And so this has been a terrific finish for him, doing a lot of things right. He is getting a lot of help over there in terms of chip and set blocks. Oftentimes opposite the right tackle now is where you get your great pass rusher. It's not really true with the Cleveland Browns because Myles Garrett typically lines up opposite the left tackle. But in a lot of cases now, you have a premier pass rusher over on that other side, like TJ Watt or Will Anderson and some of the others the Ravens have faced. And they've given him a lot of help in those games, but he's also held up very well to the prospect. And this game didn't have any pass blocking errors. He had six. I'm sorry, that's not true. I'm looking at the wrong column. He had six missed blocks, half a penetration, 1.5 pressures, and one false start, which is if you're going to have a penalty, make it be a false start, a pre-snap, no choice for the defense, kind of foul. 52 points, 0.79 per play. After adjustment, he did allow Lamar ran him out of two additional pressures in this game. So I won't say it was a perfect game by any sense, and he got a reduced adjustment for that, but still fits in the bottom of the B range, which is nice. And he's on a good run. I'm not 100% convinced He's a guy you move to left tackle in 2025, but I think that is one of the big questions for the Ravens in terms of how they deal with Stanley or try and fill his shoes on a temporary basis with a veteran.
Yeah, I'm going to be very interested to see what they do with that because they don't have a lot of options in that regard. Do they try and keep Stanley? If they leave him, then the obvious choice would be to move him to left tackle. How effective is that decision when he, you know, is still learning the game at the right tackle spot? It remains to be seen. Do you have a cheaper alternative you bring in to replace Stanley, or do you draft your replacement outright? So a lot of decisions for the Ravens to make in that regard. I do like Rosengarten. I think he's got the athleticism. He has the body for it. I think he's a fast learner. He's getting what he needs to get done. He's playing TJ Watt next week. TJ Watt lines up almost exclusively on that side. They don't do a good job of moving him around, and that's probably by design on their end. So I'm sure they'll get a lot more help from the Ravens in regards to chipping TJ Watt and what have you. But a lot of times they'll probably, in passing situations, leave him in one-on-one matchups. And I like his chances. He did pretty good. He held up his own pretty well in the first matchup. I'll see. Interesting to see with that ankle being healed, not as detrimental to TJ Watt's performance, pushing off the line, how they decide to handle TJ Watt in this upcoming contest. But all in all, I think Rosengarten had a good season. I think he played well in this one, as you mentioned, and they're going to need him moving forward in this postseason, because if they have any shot at getting, I hate moving ahead too much, but with the Chiefs did a good job of blitzing throughout the off tackles a lot and keeping Lamar Jackson in the pocket. Regardless of what the Ravens try to do, they'll need some help in the offensive tackles to prevent that from being the basis for their defense upcoming. But I like Rosengarten. I think he's going to be good, and I'm glad they decided to keep him in the game after week four, because we've seen the growth. Any thoughts on Rosengarten?
No, we're good on that. And why don't we move on and talk a little bit about some of the individual skill position players? We have some good mailbag questions, so I want to get to those. I think we've actually hit, on particular for the Browns game, on most of these guys, but maybe we each pick one guy we'd like to talk about in terms of an individual skill position. Who would you like to talk about?
I want to talk about Rashad Bateman.
Oh, I did too.
I know. Well, we can both talk about him, but let me get first crack, because I think that this is his opportunity to shine. I think even going back to last season, a lot of the Ravens schemes were pushed towards Odell Beckham. I know you have strong feelings about Odell Beckham, but it took away so many opportunities from Rashad Bateman. And I knew going into the season, not having OBJ would help accentuate his growth tremendously. And we're starting to see that in this contest. Well, in this season. And I think that Zay Flowers' absence will only further my resolve in thinking that the attack will be focused on Rashad Bateman, and he has the skill set to do it. I think the Steelers would be wise to double team this guy. If they don't, it could be a big day for Rashad Bateman, because he does have the skills to get the job done. I'm very interested to see how he does, because he played well in the Browns game after Zay Flowers left. He had a couple of huge games, including that red zone touchdown grab. So I'm very interested to see what Bateman does. I think this season, postseason, will rest on his shoulders way more than a lot of fans think.
Oh, yeah. I completely agree, by the way. Bateman's Flowers season, you know, is the first Pro Bowl season by a Ravens wide receiver ever, blah, 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 blah. And I don't want to in any way dismiss what Flowers done. Absolutely critical central part of the Ravens offense, and his ability to be an intermediate and deep threat has really helped Lamar tremendously in terms of his mid-range passing game and what he's done. Bateman has not had as many targets, but he's had rate statistics this year, which are the absolute top of Ravens history for a wide receiver. 10.5 yards per target exactly is the best in Ravens history for any wide receiver. And the only guy, the only receiver of any type who's done better in 50 or more passes is Mark Andrews in his rookie year had 11.0 yards per target. So Bateman had a, by Ravens standard, a truly historic year in terms of his production per snap. Adding to that, the fact that he had a touchdown every eight receptions this year, sorry, not every eight receptions, every eight targets this year, which is the best ever by a Ravens wide receiver. And the only guys who, there have been three guys who've ever been as high. Andrews this year, by the way, who's been even higher, 11 and 61, he's like 15.9% or something. Mark Ingram in 2019 was 5 out of 29, so he's at 17.2%. And then the other one is Isaiah Likely last year, was the same exact rate at 12.5%. So no other wide receiver has ever gotten there. And just the way the Ravens have used wide receivers of the year, you know, Torrey Smith, Kadri Ishmael, none of those guys, you know, had a touchdown every eight targets, and most of them not even remotely close to that. So the year that Bateman had can't be understated either. It's an importance and its significance in terms of the value of his three-year contract and what that's worth. He's one of the few second contract wide receivers that truly could be traded at this point for a number one pick. And I am not suggesting they do that. I'm saying that represents his value to the Ravens of that contract.
Yeah. That contract, in my opinion, is not going to be the same contract he plays with next year. I mean, if I was Bateman, I know he just got that extension, but I'm telling you that boy has played himself out of that contract almost instantaneously. And I think this postseason will be a huge determining factor, in my opinion, about where it goes, because Bateman doesn't skip a beat, and I don't expect he does with the loss of Zay Flowers, at least for the foreseeable future. I think we have to have a conversation about who the true number one wide receiver is in this offense. I know, schematically speaking, the targets are going to Zay Flowers and for good reason, but, man, Bateman just such a good job of getting open. Definitely plays well in open space. I love that play, and I don't know if you remember it during the Browns game where he catches the ball in traffic, and then he's maneuvering, trying to get extra yardage with his feet. I mean, he's gaining separation and he has the agility to get extra yards after the catch. It's just a very phenomenal receiver that we're seeing before us. And I know he was a very polarizing figure the first few years here in Baltimore, but man, is he coming to his own. Very impressive.
I'm going to push back on one thing.
Oh, okay.
I don't think there's any need at all to anoint one of these two gentlemen the number one receiver. I don't think there's any need at all. They are both fantastic targets for Lamar Jackson. But let's not forget even for a second that Lamar Jackson is the number one in this offense, whether we're running or passing the ball, he is the guy. And everybody, I mean, it's in the NBA, it's so clear you have the guy and everybody else who supports the guy in some way on most successful teams. I mean, you have a big man that supports Steph Curry and allows him to have the kind of 3-point success that he does, or you have, everybody else figuring out how to get Wilt Chamberlain the ball in terms of it. But you're feeding Wilt in the post somehow almost every time up the court and just figuring out how to do it. In the case of Jackson, you know, it everything revolves around what he does. The offense will always be built around him. It's almost an offense that can never have a number one receiver, not in the same sense that other teams can. You're always going to be building it around what can Lamar do, run, how Lamar can have multiple targets on extended plays, how Lamar makes other running backs around him better, how misdirection affects everything you could do with play action, how you get to the ball to the tight ends. Any way that restricts or advances numeric targets to any particular receiver is detrimental to the Ravens offense.
That is a very good point that you made, I guess. Yeah, because this offense runs and flows through Lamar, and a lot of the success that these guys are having, whether it be Mark Andrews, Flowers, or Bateman, is because of what the threat Lamar Jackson brings to the opposing defense and what they're choosing to do to try and stop Lamar. So, yeah, very good point in that regard.
Derrick Henry as well. I mean, he owes so much to who Lamar Jackson is, much more than the other way around. The MVP voters have it completely backwards. It's not fair. You gave Lamar Jackson Derrick Henry. No. You gave Derrick Henry Lamar Jackson. That's what you did.
I love that you said that. Oh my goodness. And I'm sure we'll talk about that later or whenever you want to talk about it. But yeah, that is completely true. 100%. Derrick Henry came from an offense that was the number one target, and man, defenses had their way with pinning it in on Derrick Henry. Now he comes to an offense where he is a supplemental piece to a puzzle that is just otherworldly in terms of offensive output. Yeah, he is so much more benefited from being in this offense because of the huge running lanes that he has that he didn't have in Tennessee. For sure. Derrick Henry is benefiting from Lamar Jackson more so the other way around.
All right. Yep. All right. I'll bring up one other player that I think is worth talking about, because we've talked about Likely and his value as a blocker. We talked a little bit about Kolar and his ability to play in line and how that could help Likely and Andrews. I don't feel the need to say anything about them specifically. I think Keaton Mitchell could be one of the really big players in addition to Hill this postseason in terms of how they use those guys, because I think there's a lot of opportunity for Pony they may have to rely on in the absence of Flowers. So they can address the absence of Flowers in two ways. They can go heavier and play extra tight ends on the field, which they'll do some of, but they can also stay light and stay with the misdirection components that either Hill or Mitchell can give you if they're split out wide. Teams like Washington have done that a lot in the past several years in terms of having two running backs on the field at the same time, two tailbacks, and using one of them as a motion guy. The Ravens have that ability. You can put two in the backfield if you want, and you can put two with and more commonly, I would say, one out to the side. One of the issues with Mitchell is he's not an ideal pass blocking back. So you don't really want him out there on third down, which takes away a big down where he could help you. So then if his role is really restricted, if he's a guy you have as an alternate threat on first or second down to give Henry a breather, say, so Henry gets you one run for six, and then he gets you another run for eight. And then, oh, we have an opportunity to bring Keaton Mitchell on the play for one play and run him before we want Henry back out there again. That's just not enough of a role for him without having some sort of flanker role where he's in motion and doing things for the team.
You made, that's an excellent point, especially with the, what the Commanders do with their running backs. Austin Eckler has had a field day, especially early on in the season because of what they're able to do. Ravens have an opportunity to do something very similar. They've tried to do it with Justice Hill as well, but I think Keaton Mitchell with his speed and what he's able to do with the turn of direction, especially near the sideline, definitely gives me some scratching my head moments for what the Ravens could possibly do with him on the outside. You're absolutely right. The Ravens will love to get some more flat reads. I think Zay Flowers, his, you know, acumen for getting open in open space in the middle of the field is very good, but also what they've been able to do with the bubble screens. And I know a lot of Ravens fans roll their eyes when they see those bubble screens with Zay Flowers because sometimes it's effective, sometimes it's not. But that does wonders for what a defense does in terms of preparation for defending the entirety of the field. Giving Keaton Mitchell those targets could be huge for them, especially in the latter portions of the game where they're trying to run the football with Derrick Henry. So very, very good point in that regard.
All right, let's jump into the mailbag and do a couple questions here because we've got some good ones. And by the way, I always encourage comments in the mailbag. If you have a strong opinion about them, just tell me the comment and slap hashtag film study mailbag on it. And we got one from Rasmus, who I thought was a burner account. Now he's telling me he's a Swedish fan, and he gave me all this pros and cons about John Harbaugh that I really liked. He's obviously not a burner account, just want to say this, and a very thoughtful Ravens fan, just happens to live in another country. But he had a great point here. I'd genuinely be shocked if Monken gets a head coaching gig. His personality doesn't cut it, and his only head coaching experience comes from Southern Mississippi in 2013. Him wanting another QB/offense to work with is also highly unlikely, given the success here. Not worried that he leaves. Argue me, someone. I don't argue at all. I think the chance he actually leaves is a little bit lower at about 25%. And I think we kind of came to an agreement on that might be a reasonable level.
Yeah.
All right. And are the reasons correct? I mean, the one reason he gave that's a little different from what we gave is that he wouldn't be successful as a head coach, perhaps because he's had limited experience with that. I think it's more that another team is going to be looking for a dynasty coach, and that would be the reason why it wouldn't necessarily be a great fit.
Yeah, I'm in the understanding. I think he'd be a great head coach. Don't get me wrong. I think because of his ability, I think the main pro from him coming out of college was that he makes players around him better. He can do whatever it takes to make sure that he gets the best out of his players. I think that's a head coach to me. And I think he would have that ability to have success in other regards. But to your point, legacy coach. I think that's a huge thing for the NFL these days. And I think given his age, he'll be less likely to receive that head coaching spot. And I think he has a good thing here in Baltimore. I mean, he has a probably 3-time MVP in Lamar Jackson, one of the most excellent, you know, athletes in the world. You don't want to give that up. So I don't think he gets the coach. I think he's right in that regard.
I want you to think about this now. You can write it down and I'll come back to you at the end of the show here. But I have five concerns at the end of this year. Okay. And I want you to rank them from 1 to 5 and how concerned you are about it. So number one, is Monken leaving to be a head coach somewhere? And number two is what the Ravens do with Ronnie Stanley, how significant that is relative to say Monken. Number three is signing Travis Jones long-term. Number four, signing Isaiah Likely. And really what that involves is deciding on Likely or Andrews kind of going forward. Because Andrews, they can play out the final year of his contract and they don't have to make any decision. They don't have to sign him, or they could even trade him a year early, get some value for him. But they basically would need to commit to either Likely or Andrews probably after this year. So that's one, that's another one. And number five is signing Linderbaum this year, as opposed to letting him potentially walk after the 2025 season. So you got those five things to worry about. Try and put those in order. I'm going to do the same thing as we go here and we go through this next question, and then we'll come back to it and we'll talk about it. But I've definitely got some strong feelings about those five relative to each other.
I agree.
All right, got a question from at Nikki622A, also known as AngeLove85. Hey, Ken, run game seemed to open up in the second half. What changed, and how can we maximize it Saturday against the Steelers, who know us so well? Got to take a crack at that one first.
Yeah, I'll take a crack. I think it was more of the zone read thing. I think, as you mentioned, when you played the trap run like that and you're bringing bodies to attack the offensive line, it's way easier, in my opinion, to disrupt things than if you go the straight up, come at you with the zone run scheme in my regard. So I think the Ravens, if I'm not mistaken, they ran a lot more of that in the second half and they had success. And then that opened up the floodgates to get the Rams going and all of that. So all in all, I think it was more of what the defense of the Browns were doing. They were just selling themselves to stop the run in some aspects. And that led to the Ravens having some trouble running the football. But I think, again, as the game progresses, it's tougher and tougher to tackle Derrick Henry. It's cold. You know, you're tired. You're 3-13, your record is. So I think all of that played a factor in it. But all in all, I think the Ravens, I think in a lot of games actually this year, they've had that slow running start and then during the end of the game, they picked it up, and I think you see that a lot. And I think the Ravens are just good at making adjustments. Tom Monken's good at making those adjustments, and he did what he had to do. So not too surprised by the outcome of that with the run game, but you love for them to start off hot in the run game like they did against the Pittsburgh Steelers during their second
Texans.
Meeting.
And
the Texans, exactly. So yeah, you love to have that fast start, but you know, you're not going to get that all the time, and the Browns did a good job of getting the start on their end.
Okay, I'll add one thing to you while you're working on your list here, is that I think the missed tackles were largely a function of the Browns packing it up for the season, and particularly after that Michael Hall injury. I just think that weighed very heavily on the rest of the Browns. You know, if you think about this and really try and empathize with the player, Michael Hall might have had plans for this offseason doing any number of things, and his exercise regimen and all the other things he could do were important and probably central to what he's doing, but now his central thing is going to be a rehab, and he's probably not going to get to go on that vacation to wherever he had planned because of this rehab. He's going to have to be around doing that. It's an awful prospect to have going into the season, and he probably won't start the season next year ready to go. So it's a long struggle back. We've seen what happened to Keaton Mitchell. He's basically going through a similar timing of injury. In fact, Mitchell's was a little earlier, and it still took him, you know, most of the way through the season to get back in there at all, and then not really playing very much when he did. So it's really sad for him. And I think that moment actually spurred on a lot more missed tackle activity at that point.
Good point. I think I agree with you on that for sure. They gave it up when there's injury. Let's dial it back. Let's dial back the intensity and just get out of here.
I got another question here from A Bits, who says, having now seen Rosengarten for a full 17 games, what's your realistic expectation on your mind for improvement in 2025? He also said, and as an aside, how did you stack up versus preseason expectation? I think the preseason expectation migrate probably was the left tackle. He's a potential solution for it in 25. He's very close to that. He's at least a good, you know, if I were to qualitatively say where I thought his season would go. He's been above that in terms of his play at right tackle. So I think that, you know, anytime you have a guy come in at a, you know, kind of a B minus level, maybe he's even slightly higher than that, but a B minus level is where I think I might put him for the whole season right now. That's a hell of a place to start your rookie year, even if you're getting a lot of help. I haven't seen him play enough on an island to believe he's an obvious answer at left tackle after these 17 games. Other thoughts on that, Sam?
No, that's literally where my head's at with him right now. I will say that being a rookie in any position is very difficult, and you really need a whole offseason to get in your groove to really acclimate to the NFL. I think you're really playing based off of athletic ability alone in some regards, especially early on in September and October, and you're just really learning the game, learning your playbook, learning the philosophy of your offense and things of that nature. So a lot of stuff that Rosengarten had to deal with in year one, I think will pay dividends in year two, having that experience. Around this time, I was thinking, you know, around that B minus and right tackle. But I think a lot of offensive linemen tell us all the time, switching from right tackle to left tackle is not an easy transition.
Yeah.
Learning to play, which I'm sure he is experienced in that regard, but just transitioning into that position and this level, the highest levels, is going to be difficult. So interesting to see what the Ravens do in that regard, how they decide to approach the issue, but it's definitely an issue that they need to address because it's coming.
I want to get at one particular characteristic the Rosengarten has that I've seen positive. I don't think I've said enough about it. He's become more of a guy who can block a player 12 to 6. And the Ravens scheme doesn't really force him to do that too much. But oftentimes when you get help and you're left on an island, 12 to 6 is a great way to block. Rick Wagner is kind of the Raven I associate as much as anyone with that. And another guy who used his length exceptionally well in that way was Orlando Brown in terms of getting guys south of the pocket. And that's a great place. Lamar doesn't really have any fear, even on an extended play, of being able to lose track of that guy. And it very rarely comes back to bite you. He's done a very good job with that. I've been very positive, and I haven't mentioned enough, I don't think, on this show how well he's done at that.
That's a very good assessment. I've seen that a lot in film where he does that 12 to 6 kind of block and still has control of the defender and doesn't force him into Lamar Jackson, which I think sometimes some players will try and do or get forced into when playing that style of football. But yeah, very good point. Rosengarten has done a great job in that.
It's really a key for any tackle doing that is you've got to get this is kind of a pylon where he's scoring a touchdown on the block. You think of it that way, where he's got to get that defender by there instead of impeding the throwing cone or impeding the area where Jackson may want to move through. But that it's a very narrow band. And with Wagner, his whole career, and I scored every block of Ricky Wagner's career, of his Ravens career anyway, was a case of there were a lot of really close judgments there where he was very close of just getting the guy by Flacco and putting him in a good position to still make a play. But I see some of that from Rosengarten has been generally quite positive that seeing that particular thing.
That's an awesome assessment. Yeah, I'm thoroughly impressed with that. I wonder if that will transition to the left side with Lamar. I wonder how it does, because I see a lot of times, I mean, some of that is just Stanley getting bull rushed and getting pushed back. But I wonder how Lamar would adjust to that. He's really good at it. Pocket presence is underrated for Lamar, actually, in that regard. So,
oh, he's at the top of the league. Yeah, he's phenomenal. He's remarkable.
Yeah, so I don't think that will play too much of a part if he wants to make that switch to left tackle, but definitely interesting to see how they decide to do that.
This is one of the things. I mean, Rosengarten's actually very similar to Stanley in that he's got a very good mirror, and he will he's probably not at Stanley's level, but he's got a very good mirror and the ability to stay in front of a guy. And in order to make that happen, he'll often give ground to do so. And that's something Lamar's worked very well with. So in a sense, it won't be a big change for him if Rosengarten is the guy. So maybe I'm talking myself into liking this move a little better, even though they might not have a chance. They might not have an alternative. Yeah. It might be the only option.
Yeah. Agreed.
Yeah. All right. Let me see if there's one more question out here, and then we'll get back to our big five here. Nope. I think we're good. I think we got all the questions that were out in the mailbag. So let me hear your five in order. And one more time, it's Monken leaving as a head coach for somewhere else, Stanley and his situation at left tackle and what they have to decide there, Jones on a long-term deal, likely, or Andrews, the choice between those two, and Linderbaum on a long-term contract. Give me your concerns 1 through 5. Where are you, what's your highest level of concern? Oh, well, maybe what's your lowest level of concern of those five? You want to start there?
Sure. My lowest level of concern is Monken. I think I think Monken is pretty much going to stay put. I like him as an offensive coordinator. I even like him as a head coach in some regards, but you've made some excellent points and we've talked about it throughout both episodes. I think he's going to stay put. And so my concern isn't as high with him leaving. I think he'll be an OC for the Ravens in 2025.
Okay. Lower risk, pretty high severity if it happens, but a low risk, I would agree. And that's why he's number five. Number four for you.
Yes. Number four, I've been flip-flopping with it. I'm going to go with likely at number four. The only reason why I say that is they have two great tight ends. I mean, you have two decisions to make. I'm cool with either one. My thought process is likely to let Andrews go, either trade him or move him and keep likely. It just makes the most economical sense at this stage in Andrews' career and the resurgence of likely. You want him on your offense for sure. He's a younger guy. I just think that the decision's pretty much made. I don't think this offense will definitely lose some punch without Andrews. I think having the two tight ends that are very skilled is definitely beneficial in part with what the defense has to defend. But my concern with it isn't as high because I know that the decision is coming and it's probably the best decision.
Okay, so I'm exactly with you on the four for likely. We've got all three tight ends are maturing. Their contract is up in the same year. I do think it's a good time to move on from Andrews because I think you're selling high. after a very big year that he's had this year. I think that, you know, a lot of the health concerns are gone, and I think another team probably is willing to give up something for him. Now, fans need to be realistic about what that is, because effectively they'd be cutting Andrews to try and make space in the cap to sign some of these other guys that we're talking about on this exact same list, including, say, a Travis Jones or Ronnie Stanley or somebody like that to an extension here. But if they do trade him, maybe they could even get a 3 for him. I would have said a 4 at midseason would be about what you'd expect. Andrews at $12 million, I think, is what his salary is next year. Is still a bargain for a tight end, and somebody else could sign him for long-term after that if they really believed in his future. But I think the Ravens now could maybe get a 3 for him. He's not the kind of player you get a 1 or a 2 for, so just get that out of your mind right away. but at age 30, you know, getting a 3 for Mark Andrews would be terrific. I think it'd be a very hard thing for the Ravens to pass through their colon kind of thing in terms of making a transaction like this, but it's the kind of thing that, you know, great organizations have to do to try and address their drafting success and deal with it. And you saw them trade Hayden Hurst, Marquise Brown, Orlando Brown to try and disassemble that 2018 draft. And it had to be done. It just had to be done.
I agree. It's just something they got to do. And it's a product of their success. You know, it's just one of those things. I'm sure there's another team that's going to enjoy having Andrews, but the Ravens have a surplus of talent there and not a lot of cap space.
We welcome you back for Ring of Honor Day, Mark. Either way, you've earned that respect and had a great Ravens career. How about your number 3 among those 5 things?
Number 3, I have Stanley. I have him at 3. I was considering making him higher, but I think it's a foregone conclusion, in my opinion, that he's likely going to be gone, or they're going to have to make some sort of deal happen where they're paying him money, more money than I think that he may be deserving of at this stage of his career. They have options with having Rosengarten move to the left tackle spot. If they're not comfortable with that decision, then it gets dicey. Then you have to decide where you're getting that left tackle from. It's a very important piece to their success, having the blind side protected, as well as pushing and run support, because they love to run on that side of the field, most likely because they have a guy in Ronnie Stanley who's able to make his blocks, as well as their left guard working well with their center. So all in all, I think Stanley's departure or potential departure is concerning, but in the grand scheme of things, with all those 5 options, I say middle of the pack, so 3.
Okay, so I'll just address this right now so we can keep the conversation shorter, but to me, Stanley's the number one call, and it's a difficulty of acquiring the position. You see every year the left tackle market, if you're trading for almost any other position at the end of the camp, it's a 7th round pick or it's a conditional 7th round pick, you trade for a left tackle at the end of camp, it's a 5th for a 6th. It's a, you know, you're even, and those are guys on the margin of the roster. You know, you're not even necessarily trading for good players. Acquiring a quality left tackle, very difficult to do in the draft, in particular where the Ravens will be. Even if they decided they wanted to use their number one pick on the spot, it'd be extremely difficult to get the guy they want. So they're going to have to spend some money somehow. They got 3 out of 4 tackles leaving. I think Stanley is the number one on their list, but that would be my reasoning for it. So let's move on to your number 2.
But number 2 is Linderbaum. I think Linderbaum's definitely a guy who you have to make a decision about. I think he has the Pro Bowl, so he's earned some money in that regard as far as extension goes and all of that stuff. So you got to make a decision on him quick. I think they wind up extending him and keeping him sooner than later. Would not be surprised if that happened this year. But all in all, I think that he's a very important piece of the puzzle. He's had a down year. He's regressed a little bit. But I think if you surround him with some talent on the guard side, I know they've made some decisions with the guards this year to kind of train as you go, if you will. So we'll see what the experience does next year, or if they bring in some talent to help Linderbaum out. But either way, I think you got to bring him back. You spent the first round pick on him. He's performed well enough to get those Pro Bowls. Find a way to keep him.
Okay, so Linderbaum's situation is also my number 2, and I think that got elevated. I think he'd had him as number 3. Before the second Pro Bowl elevated his 5th-year option number by $2 million, I believe, which is good. They can't even use that as a placeholder. They can't pay him that. So they can't put themselves in a position in the negotiation where they pick up that option, and then that becomes part of his negotiating leverage. They have to say no on that, which means they really have to negotiate right away. And I don't see any way they don't go into 2025 without the Linderbaum situation decided. really specifically with the long-term deal. I think they love him. I think they want him to be their leader of the line for years to come. But this is the time they now are forced into making that decision. Probably it becomes even more important than it was at midseason when they didn't know he was going to make a Pro Bowl this year.
Yeah, I agree completely. They'll need to find a way to resolve it. I think they do. Which way they go, I would be just guessing, but I would say they got to keep him, you know. So okay, we'll see what they do.
Great thought experiment. So your number one is my number three, and talk about Travis Jones a little bit.
I cannot overstate how much Travis Jones means to this defense. I love him so much. He's just such a great player. You could tell the difference when he's on the field and when he's not. When he's injured and playing with injury and when he's not, you could tell the difference right away. Having a defensive tackle that can pass rush, get to the quarterback, disrupt in the run game too, something that's not talked about enough with Travis Jones. I just think that you don't get away from that. And Nnamdi Madubuike has had a down year from the previous season, and Travis Jones has not. And I think if you pair those two together, success is bound to happen. Can you get him in for a price that's, you know, relatively satisfying for your cap space? Remains to be seen. We'll see what the other teams around the league think about him. But if you can find a way to keep Travis Jones, I think it goes a long way in keeping his defense as dominant as we've seen them through the last few weeks of this season and obviously the previous seasons.
Completely agree. The Ravens pass rush completely driven from the middle, and their ability to find aging pass rushers off the scrap heap has been largely dependent on having players like Jones and Pierce on the interior, and not Madubuike. Madubuike is a guy you want to scheme one-on-one wins for. Basically, you scheme for the opponent to have to double team players like Pierce and Jones, and they never look good in terms of their individual sack totals, but I dare you to try and block them one-on-one and see that pocket get morphed in terms of what they can do. They still won't pick up a ton of sacks, but they'll create a ton of pocket morphing that will ruin your passing game if you do. And the Ravens have lived off that with Elodie Nada. They lived off that obviously for many years, and they lived off with Sam Adams going back to the 2000-2001 Ravens in terms of what he could do. There's so much value derived from having a healthy Jones in there. And he is the running mate now of Madubuike. They're almost out there on every single play together. They bring in a B team totally with Pierce and Washington, or Pierce and Urban, and it's not a bad second look, not bad by any means. But at the beginning of 2023, Pierce was the guy who was the pass rushing specialist on the Ravens, and Jones was a guy who was the backup nose. That completely changed in the second half. They went to Jones and Madubuike, and they were just an unbelievable pairing. They've been together almost the entire year on a snap-by-snap basis.
Love them. Can't say enough good things about them. I think if Ravens fans don't really understand it because they don't have the sack totals, just watch the film. He's being double-teamed almost every play, and for good reason. He's just too important for this team. And he doesn't have the sack numbers, so you don't really have to have a premium price on his head to keep him. So I'm interested to see what they do. But maybe a couple of defensive coordinators who witness his greatness, maybe a couple of offensive coordinators who get into the ears of the GM to get it done. So be interested to see what the Ravens do in order to keep him. Hopefully they are able to.
Yeah, I think there's a pretty good chance because, you know, you have him basically one more year under contract on his rookie deal still. So they'd issue an extension on that. And hopefully a 3 or 4 year extension would be reasonable. And you'd get it at a, I don't even know what the number would be. I'd hesitate to guess, but you know, I'd love to think you could maybe get a slight discount on it, and that still might mean 11 or 12 million per year for 4 years, or it might mean 15. I really don't know. But either way, it's going to be a price worth paying to keep the overall value of your pass rush at a high level. Really appreciate you. The discussion in general I've loved, and this is why we've run way over tonight, Sam, but that's okay. It's okay for me. Hope I'm not holding you from family obligations here, but
not at all.
This kind of a thought experiment is the bread and butter of this show and something we love to do. And I really appreciate you doing that with me here for just a minute. But tell folks where they can find your work online and where your podcast and your Twitter handle.
Yeah. So you can find my podcast on YouTube mostly at Ravens Talk Podcast. Find me on Apple Podcasts, also on Spotify. We post every week, but we post a lot more as the playoffs progress. Hopefully the Ravens going all the way, and we'll talk about it and have our thoughts on it each step of the way. You can also find me on Twitter X at Ravens Talk Podcast. I usually converse with fans on there about matchups and just overall game day stuff. So always fun to talk to fans about it on Twitter X. You can also find me on Instagram where we post media at Ravens Talk Podcast as well.
All right. Other folks out there, thanks for listening. As always, if you're listening at the end of this podcast, I know you're some of the best fans of all time. If you want to do two things to help the show, the first thing I'd say is show the show to another person. Show an older person maybe how to play it directly off the website. Somebody who doesn't download podcasts, that's a perfectly fine. Like and subscribe on YouTube if you can. And otherwise, thanks so much for your loyalty and contributions in particular to hashtag film study mailbag, which we want you to always use. Sam, thanks again for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
The NFL playoffs are better with FanDuel. Because right now, new customers can bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, guaranteed. That's $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. FanDuel, an official sportsbook partner of the NFL. 21 plus and present in select states. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets, which expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
At Verizon, anyone can trade in their old phone for a new one on us with Unlimited Ultimate, which means everyone in your family could get a new phone and stay on your family plan, keeping you close.
Hey, Mom, you seen my toothbrush?
Yeah, I'm almost done with it.
Oh, maybe too close.
Trade-in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us. We're open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details.